Hello again, Dwayne Brummett here with Allie Alvarigo, SchoolOwnerTalk.com. Good morning, Allie.
Good morning, Dwayne. How's it going?
Wonderful, wonderful. Had a beautiful weekend. My son had a volleyball tournament. He plays beach volleyball, and he actually got first place this time with his partner, which was fun. Also went to a school over the weekend, too, where I was helping a school owner, coaching him on setting up some systems. And while I was there, why not teach a seminar, right? So we taught a seminar. I taught a seminar while I was there, a couple of them, and he made some money with that, and it was a great time. How about you? What happened this weekend?
Saturday taught all day. We have an interesting. I'd love to talk about a topic that that I ran up against as well this weekend. I think the call is I'd love to talk about how. We should set rules, and it kind of will lead into what I went through. I mean, I had a great weekend. I hung out by the pool with family and friends on Sunday and relaxed. Saturday, I taught all morning and then went to a Sweet 16 party where something came up that I'll bring out in a few minutes. Overall, just a great, listen, life is what you make it, right? And it's all about perspective. Did you see the video on Facebook that's going around where the guy is talking to the girl and she's got a nail in her forehead?
Oh, dude, yeah. I put that up, yeah.
Yeah, that is the funniest thing ever where, he's talking to her and he's going, well, maybe it's the – she's going, I have a headache. I'm so in so much pain. And he's like, well, maybe it's the nail, And she's like, you're always trying to fix me. It's not about the nail. It's not about that. He has to use all his patience to sit back and just listen. And then finally, after it's all done, the story. I'm explaining it to the listeners. He just sits back and goes, well, I really understand how you feel. And she sat happy with that. She just wanted to be validated. Then they go to kiss and she hits in the forehead and the nail goes in deeper. And that's when the video ends a little. But it's all about not seeing that nail in your forehead. It's about seeing past it. Or somebody could look from the outside in and point out what's wrong when people are in what I call the thick of things. Sometimes you don't even see it going on.
Yeah. And let me just clarify that we're relating this video as we talk, but it doesn't have to be a woman with the nail on her forehead.
Exactly.
So I don't want any. Yeah, I mean, no offense to the ladies that are listening to this call, because that's not what we're talking about with regards to the nail. So I don't want anybody to get offended. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And yeah, and it's really about sometimes you and I. I coach one of my clients and I'm like, well, you got to do steps 1, 2, 3. And they're like, but the favorite word is but, and I'm like, stop it with the buts. Just go and do what I say. I guarantee you're going to get results. But until they change their paradigm, and I have a funny story about paradigm, not to make me sound stupid, but when I was younger, I read a book and I read the word paradigm for the first time. I was probably like in my early 20s, right? So I actually maybe a little bit older, and I went to my ex-wife, who's my ex-wife now, but she's still like my best friend. And at the time, I had said, "Oh, this paradigm is amazing that they're talking about." She's like, "What?" And I'm like, "The paradigm, And she's like, "I don't know what you're talking about." I go, "Paradigm, like, what's wrong with you? Do I have to teach you everything?" And then I show her the word, and she's like, "Oh, paradigm?" And so me, I'm thinking I know what I'm talking about, and my entire paradigm, my entire view of the world or that view of that specific thing was changed immediately, where I became the student, right? And I thought I was the teacher at that moment in time. So, with you and I, when we coach people, quite often I'll tell one guy, please do this and do that, and then he's always, I motivate him, and I rah, 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 like a football coach before they go out and do the last play of the game. And then I feel like right at the end, I'm like, okay, what are you going to do? And he'll go, oh, man, life sucks. Like, oh, man, you drag me right back down again. And certain people, one, they don't have rules in their vocabulary or in their mindset to not let this happen. And two, that's their paradigm where they're always dragged back to the negative.
Yeah, I remember when I was a meat cutter, long story short, but how I got into that. But anyways, one of the guys, he was just so negative all the time. I finally turned to him and I said, Brent, I said, it must be miserable being miserable all the time.
Yeah.
Like I just had enough. But you're right. We as, there's school owners fall prey to this just like anybody else, where they just get stuck in a rut and they can't see you know, I say they can't read the prescription on the medicine bottle because they're on the inside. And that's where coaches like you and I come in, where we can, you know, we've been there and we've gotten ourselves out of it, or we've been there and we, you know, didn't get ourselves in it, so we can get somebody else out of it. And it's just,
right.
it's sad how that works.
And the one thing that I could say is 100% true, that most successful coaches, Tony Robbins, you know, all those people, Brian Tracy, Zig Ziglar, they'll all say, is if you want to immediately and quickly change your state, is to change the people that you spend time with mostly. And
yeah.
not to get rid of those people, but it's just like anything else. And this is another phenomenon within a dojo that I find. And I did a video, a DVD on it, and it's called Success Strategies or something like that. It's still available on my website if anyone wants to look into it. But it talked about levels, right? You know, 0 to 25 students and how you get there quickly or slowly, and then you kind of hover for a long time until you break the 50 model. Or maybe you got 0 to 50 quickly, but then you're hovering around the 50 mark and you get to 75, and then you hover and you get to 100 and you hover. And when I say hover, you get stuck in that time space, that group of students. And I find the phenomenon to be interesting, because what happens is we learn to maintain that group of people, that 100 students, and we get really good at having 100 students. But in order to grow to 150, you have to act differently. You have to have different systems. You have different processes. You can't just keep doing the same thing over and over again, because it's just not like you keep plugging people into the system. And that's where the in through the front door, out through the back door, or fill the holes in the bucket analogy comes, where you have students coming in the front and they're leaving out the back at the same rate, so you're staying at the same number that you have. And you have to implement things to change that in order for your school to be able to grow.
Right. And like you said, the business has to change. But on top of that, and you said this, but I just want to clarify this for everybody, is that not only does the business have to change from going from 100 to 150 to 150 to 200, but the person, you yourself, has to change. Because you may get a spike. You may go from, you know, 100 to 140 to almost 150, but you're still, you yourself are still 100 person, 100 student person. You'll eventually fall back to that 100. So you yourself have to change, not just your business. And then your business will change if you change. And alongside that, your staff has to change too.
Right, right. And your team is a vital part of that, because if they get very comfortable working at the level that they're at. Very rarely does a team go, I'm going to push myself out of this comfort zone because I want to add more people. I want to grow the location. I want to make more money, because that's not how they're wired in their DNA. Their DNA is more of a instructor and employee versus an entrepreneur. They have spurts of wantrepreneurism, where they want to be an entrepreneur, act like one, but then they level back off. And again, until we train them to think the way we want them to think and help them get that mindset, they're never going to get there. So that's part of our responsibility as well. And that's where I once dinner with Brian Tracy. And just sitting with him for like the 2 hours we sat with a few people, it was just incredible to see how he thinks at a whole different level. Again, my paradigm was changed. I mean, my paradigm, you know, and it was looking at it going like, holy crow. I mean, that it's amazing. Like sitting in a room with Donald Trump, maybe, and how he runs real estate and businesses would be much different than sitting in, you know, the room with a bagel maker, you know, who maybe makes a few hundred thousand a year, but not a few million or a few billion. So it's different muscles that they work in their body. And again, I go back to, you know, wanting to do rules, you know, like build rules for our person, for ourselves. You know, what are our rules in life? You know, what do we have, the five rules that, you know, like in the Bruce Lee movie, and Jim Kelly said, there is a point I won't go beyond and enter the dragon. You know, but there are certain things in life that we got to look at and go, what are our rules? Like, what will we do every day to push ourselves to new limits? What will we not accept as defeat? You know, what is what we consider negativity and we have to get rid of and shun and be away from? Those are things that are important. In fact, I have a quote I'm posting today from Brian Tracy. It says, a major stimulant to creative thinking is focused questions. There's something about a well-worded question that often penetrates to the heart of the matter and triggers new ideas and insights. Kind of really kind of dynamic for what we're doing right now. That quote is perfect. You know, and what are our rules? What is our DNA? That's the big thing that we should be asking ourselves. Do you have any suggestions or thoughts on that?
Well, I guess it kind of falls down to you got to stand for something, you're going to fall for anything. And,
right.
You know, and we each have our own set of rules. Part of them, I guess, are, you know, based upon our upbringing. If you have a religious or non-religious background, of course, you'll have a different set of rules for each. But then, you know, you as yourself as an individual, you have to decide what you're going to stand for and what you're not going to stand for, what you're going to allow and what you're not going to allow. And then you need to, as the owner of your business, you need to make sure that you can't control everybody's actions inside of your school, but you can dictate the environment. And so I know, like, we've had some pretty hardcore people sometimes come into our school and try it out, and it's not for them. You know, and what I mean by hardcore is all they want to do is just beat people up.
Right.
And that's not what we're about. And so they don't last very long in our school. So therefore, you know, grooming an instructor that has that type of mindset too really is a non-issue for us, because that's not how we run our school to begin with. And so somebody getting to that level where they could actually instruct and get paid for us, I don't think would ever happen, just based upon the dynamics that we've built inside of our school. And so we have to make sure that not only our students understand, you know, who we are, what we stand for, our brand and all those things, but, you know, alongside that, our students become our instructors, and then our instructors need to adhere to those things. And of course, you can't make them not smoke, not drink, not do drugs or what have you, but you can implement systems in there or rules inside that, you know, don't allow those things. Obviously, you can't come to work drunk. You can't, you know, I even have the thing that everybody signs that, you know, I can do random drug testing if I want. And they if they're going to be an instructor of mine, they have to allow me to be able to do that and just do a surprise drug test. I mean, I can remember before my head instructor, who he is now, you know, before he was my head instructor, he was just on my storm team, and then he wanted to be an instructor. And I'm a little old fashioned, so people that are here, you know, going to hear this are probably going to have some choice words for me, but he had an earring. And I didn't want him to be an instructor with an earring.
Right.
And come to, you know, and I put it out there. I hired him at 15 to, you know, start getting paid and those type of things. And eventually it went away. You know, like he didn't want to have the ring anymore, earring. He didn't even have the hole in there anymore. I mean, it was just one of those things. And I've had instructors who have long hair. And I prefer them not to have, like, the long hair over the eyes. And I know that's the style, but inevitably it's been where they have done it on their own. They've cleaned up, they've shaven, or they, you know what I mean? I mean, not shaven, but they've cut it. So it all is based upon the environment, I think, that you create. And then you make sure that environment or brand, if you will, is explained in 100,000 different ways to not just your students, but also your instructors as well.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting. I had long hair my whole life, and when I joined my teacher's school, Sheon Felix Vasquez, now O-Sensei Felix Vasquez, they were a very militaristic type school, and everyone had buzzed haircuts like they were in the Marines, you know, and I come in with this long ponytail, and they're like, first thing you have to do is cut your hair. And I'm like, well, I can't do that. I love to be your student, but I'm in a rock band and blah, blah, blah. Well, that was a big contingency, you know, and I'm like, I'll ponytail it back and gel it back and that kind of thing. But then after they got to know me and knew me, and of course I wasn't teaching, I was just training, they overlooked it. And later on in life, I ended up cutting my hair, and, you know, that was years, years later. But I hear you. You know, we have to remember the brand image that we have within our dojo is something that, you know, you, myself, whoever the teacher is, maybe not. Let's just use you and I, for example, right now. We actually put a lot of time and thought into our brand, right, into our image, and into what people see. And that is just so, so important, because that vision is what the perception is, what people will understand, right? And if we're not doing it, we're in trouble. So that leads to, like, rules within your staff. You know, are they not allowed to have earrings? Although I'm not sure if you're allowed to do that physically. Are you allowed to tell them to cut their hair? In certain states, you can and cannot. You have a right to work state. You know, you can't tell them that they can't, you know, they have to be in certain weight, or they can't, you know, in New York, we're allowed to, the one thing that we're still allowed to do, which is great, is to say that you're not allowed to smoke, and we don't have to hire you, and we could fire you if you smoke, if you smell of smoke or whatever. But certain states, that's protected. So interestingly enough, we have to be really careful with what we tell them they can and can't do. However, you and I want to create rules within our school. Do you agree?
Oh, undoubtedly. And you got to obviously check your state for those type of rules. And I did not hire him because he had an earring, or I did not hire some of the other people that had longer hair.
Right.
You know, and it was never any peer pressure to cut it or to get rid of it. You
right.
know, it just happened that they grew
Decided.
Out of it, or they changed. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? I'll tell you. I'm going to give you a perfect example. When I had my ponytail and long hair, I owned a school. So I could sell anybody, right? You know, join in my school. I was able to sell the program. But I have to tell you, then I got offered a part in a movie where I had to play this mafia bad guy and cut my hair really short and look Guido-ish, kind of, you know, a very New York Italian look. Anyway, so I did that. And coming back from the movie, I was signing people up, and it was like 10 times easier. And I'm going, wow, things are getting better. I must be getting really good at this. And then all of a sudden it clicked, and I'm like, you know what? My hair is shorter. So that, even though I was so good at overcoming the objections and selling them on who I was, there was a little bit of a contingency with the long hair. So that once the long hair went away, man, the sales went through the roof. So I didn't
yeah.
realize that how much. And they say there are, you know, you can go on the internet and read this about statistics about people who have beards, and, you know, they don't want facial hair on salespeople, or hair below the collar. And there are certain criteria, because certain people, as sad as it may be, they look at you a certain way. It's just like when we look at a person with earrings and tattoos on their neck and face, differently than we would look at a person who doesn't have those things. So as you know, controversial as the profiling is, it's the truth. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, it is. I remember a story that Zig Ziglar told, where he was in a restaurant or someplace, I don't know, but this guy walks in with this outlandish hair, and he turned
right.
to his wife, and he says to his wife, he says, "What happened to that guy? Was he in an accident?" You know,
yeah.
and she's like, no, he just got done, just got his hair done or something. And he's like, he did that on purpose.
Yeah.
You know, and the whole thing was that he was talking about that. And he did say, you know, I would fight. He goes, I'd go to war and die for him to have the right to do that. He says, I just wouldn't give him a job.
Right.
And he goes, I
right.
hope that he would do the same thing for me. He would fight for me as well. But, you know, and I don't know that he was being racist or prejudiced or anything, because the whole story was about the fact that your image is important. And you know, you're right. If you want to be successful, you do need to take some of those things into consideration and make sure that your staff and your students, or staff specifically, but students too, but your staff knows that there's an image that needs to be portrayed. And when they step out of that image, you know, it's our responsibility to, and I like that you brought this up before about, Brian Tracy, is that we have to ask pressing questions or good questions to get them to think. Like, I'll give you, for instance, we had one of our black belt graduations, and we always do like a circle drill where we have multiple people attacking the candidates. And this one candidate was in the middle, and he's also one of my instructors. He had just tested for third degree, and he was getting a little angry, and he was using more anger than he was using, you know, finesse and technique and strategy even. And he got hurt. He got hurt. He ended up going to the hospital, nothing serious. But, well, later in that evening when we were closing down, one of my other instructors said in front of this other instructor, who is a friend, like they're the guy that got hurt and this other kid are like buddies. I mean, really good buddies. In fact, I'm losing them this year because they're going off to college together. So they're that good of friends. So this other instructor says to me in front of them, you know, like, you know, well, the reason he got hurt is because, you know, he was, you know, not thinking and using, you know, his muscle and anger. And I said, well, I said that might be one of the reasons why. And then when the other kid walked out, I waited till he walked out and I said, you know, hey, look, I said, you do know that, you know, this kid and this other kid are good friends, right? And he says, well, yeah. And I said, do you realize what you just asked me and what you said in front of his friend?
Right.
And like he stopped and he thought about it and he's like, yeah.
Right.
He goes,
right.
I was just saying the truth. And I said, well, no, I understand that. And had it just been you and I in here and we talked about it and you asked questions, that's different than doing it in front of, you know, his best friend.
Right.
You know, and he was just, you know, and we're all good friends. It was just, you know, one of those things. And so I kind of had to guide him like, you know, yeah, you're right. I agree. But I don't know that that was the appropriate time to do that.
Yeah, and you know what? It tends, and I brought this up. I talked to you a little in confidentiality before, in confidence, that, you know, what I went through at this Sweet 16 party was actually something that really bothered me as well, where this Sweet 16 party for my one young student who's on my demo team, and my entire demo team's there. A ton of my young black belts are there from my leadership team and people from the dojo and families. And one of the instructors got to drinking a little, and he ended up getting drunk. At first, he was just a little buzzed, and he was singing songs and karaokeing, and it was all fun. But then I guess the alcohol hit him, and it really started to knock him out, and he was kind of staggering. And he wasn't a mean drunk, starting fights and being a jerk and cursing. He's very respectful still, but at the same time, he was drunk and, you know, obviously drunk, where it was just not a good thing. The parents at first were, oh, it's so cute, and they still stuck with that. Even one of the moms drove him home, and, you know, to me, I had, from the minute that happened, my entire night was ruined. I had a knot in my stomach, and now I'm a bit of a prude when it comes to this stuff, because I'm, you know, I'm a little bit of a goody two-shoes. I don't curse. I had a few drinks in my lifetime, never tried a drug, never tried to smoke. You know, I'm a vegan, as you know, because of my spiritual beliefs of not harming anything on the planet. Not to say that, you know, that anything else is wrong. I'm just saying these are my belief systems. So I create an image around my martial arts school. It's a very holistic and, you know, a spiritual place with a real high level of moral integrity and morality, you know, is important for me. And I was very disturbed by the young black belts seeing their teacher, who runs one of my schools or, you know, whatever, helps me run the dojos, drinking a little. And I know I might be a little bit overreacting. But at the same time, that's not the image that I want for my school. That's not what I want. I want the kids to be able to see someone who's been steadfast, that is incredibly high level of morals. And not to say that alcohol is bad. People drink all the time. Probably a lot of these kids' parents are having drinks. To me, though, that's not what I like for an instructor. What do you think?
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, I remember when my the head instructor I have now, when he got married, you know, I went to and I'll have a drink every once in a while, and but I went to his wedding. I didn't drink at all. I just I wouldn't do it, you know. And I mean, there was other people that had drinks and they were drinking and what have you, and nobody got unruly. But I just was not going to do that because I had other instructors that were there, and I think the majority of the other instructors know that I am not against drinking. I am against getting drunk. And let me kind of lay this out too, because this can be a big deal as well. I mean, I run, as you know, I run a Christian martial arts school. So,
right.
And there's a lot of Christians that believe that you shouldn't drink at all.
Right.
And I don't know, I don't believe that scripture says that anyways. I believe that it just says that you're not supposed to get drunk and you're not supposed to overindulge in anything, whether it's eating or alcohol, right? So,
gluttony, right, is one of the.
So, so for me, you know, I wasn't going to do that. And so that's a big deal for me. You know, if I were to have, you know, something like that in happen to me with regards to what happened to you, I definitely would have that knot in my stomach. And the same, I think I would, I don't think you overreacted at all or that you felt incorrectly, because I would have felt the same way.
Yeah, well, if this was years ago, I would have kicked him out of the school and fired him on the spot, you know. However, I become a lot more tolerant and understanding to feelings of, you know, or people's, what people do that doesn't fully align with my mindset. Like, for example, when I first became a vegetarian, you probably wouldn't have wanted to be around me, because we'd go out to dinner and I'd be like, Dwayne, you do realize that, you know, three pigs died for that slice of bacon, right? And, you know, you realize that you're enjoying that hamburger and two beautiful, you know, like I would come out, I would be pointing it out. People would not enjoy their night being around me. So my, in fact, I give my ex-wife credit, because she had to tolerate me for all those years in regards to that stuff. But now I'm much more understanding. I listen, people do what they do. They live and let live, and, you know, and that's okay. However, you know, you and I and every other school owner out there, we have to protect our image, because if we don't, we could be destroyed by certain things like that. That could be a backlash. Like what these guys don't realize, it's just getting drunk and having fun, or having a few drinks and getting a little tipsy and buzz. And then the young kids, my young black belts, are going, oh, sensei so-and-so is, you know, drinking. That's okay for me to drink then. And I am on the whole opposite end of the spectrum, and I'll say, I don't drink, I don't do drugs, I don't do any of this stuff. And that's where I am in my life. But I don't say that everyone has to do those things. I don't say that everyone should be a vegan, but I just let people know that's who I am, so that they understand that I come from a very strong moral fiber in and hold to my own beliefs. Whether they agree with them or not, I have to be that person, you know, because that's how I built my school, if that makes
right.
sense.
No, it does. I remember, I mean, I remember the reason why I implemented a random drug policy was because I got wind of one of my instructors who was, you know, smoking marijuana. And
right.
of course I couldn't prove it. So, you know, I implemented that, had everybody sign it. And, shortly after that, he went, got another job.
Yeah. So. And funny as it may seem, I had the same thing where it was a guy and I said, you know, I heard that you're doing this. And he's like, no, I'm not. And I said, there's a photo of you on Facebook. And he's like, no, that's a hookah lounge I was at. And I'm like, still doesn't matter, dude, that you can't, if you want to have private photos on your Facebook page, then you have to have a private page. If you're going to be a public figure, you can't have what you put on your page and have my students, my clan, my people looking at your stuff. It's just like there are coaches that we know in this industry that do nothing but drop the F-bomb and curse, and they don't act at all in what I consider a martial way. They're just not good representation of what we do as martial artists. However, there are also those martial artists that act a certain way, and they're total phonies, because I've hung out with them at the Maya Super Show where they're drop-dead drunk and, you know, cursing and treating people badly and, you know, and so on. I'm going, no, this is not what I consider martial arts. That's why I didn't like originally going to Vegas for the Super Show, because it was I got to see the worst of everybody. But then when I found better people that lived like I did but still had fun, then I was able to regain my confidence in the martial art industry and anyway and you know in the Super Show.
Yeah, I like I remember Zig Ziglar telling us, and I'm sorry to bring him up again, but I just
okay, yeah,
really
he was
like
an
Zig. But he was talking about that there was a comedian or a speaker one time that, you know, this big company had asked for one of his demo tapes because they wanted to maybe use him. And then they contacted him back and said, sorry, we're not going to use you. And he says, well, may I ask why? And they said, well, yeah, there's profanity in, you know, one of your tapes. He said, well, that's fine. I can just take it out. And he said, and this was the kicker. They said back to him, well, we wanted somebody that didn't have it in there in the first place.
Right. There you go. And I like that. I really do. I enjoy the fact that, You know, there is a certain, and listen, I don't curse, but I know, and I hang out with tons of people who do. You know, some people don't look at it like I do. You know, they, like, to me, I think it's easier not to curse than it is, it's harder not to curse than it is to curse and to be able to explain yourself without a curse. And I'm not being, you know, a prude about it, but I also have a new employee that I just hired, and in the last few conversations I've had with him, he's slipped a few times and cursed, dropped the F-bomb and, you know, this and that. And I'm like, dude, you do realize that you cursed again, and you cannot keep on doing this or else you can't work for me, because I don't want you to slip up in front of a student or slip up in front of one of my clients, because that's not the image that I want for my business. Do you get that? Right? And that's hard. So I think we have to have certain rules. And again, I'm going to have a talk with this instructor. Maybe he just doesn't see it like I do, and I have to maybe open his eyes to what other people are seeing. You know what I mean? Because we create an image that, you know, that we want people to follow. And that's really important for us. And that's why I wrote an article called Convenience Morality, at how everyone is moral and always good when it's convenient. But when you ask them to be moral, when the tough situations come up, to do what is right, that's hard at times for people. And that's where, as instructors, I believe having the highest level of integrity as a martial arts school owner is what separates us from the other businesses, the other schools, the other, you know, whatever companies that are out there.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. And I think this, you know, this convenience morality, if you will, it just, when the tough times hit, it really shows you who you are. You know what I mean? You're showing others. It's like, again, this is Zig Ziglar's phrase, but you know, he says a hypocrite is just not himself on Sunday.
Right.
You know, and of
right.
course, he's talking about the person going to church. You know.
Right. Here's the thing: I'll spill the beans on one thing that happened to me that I shared with you, and I want the world to hear it. I'm not going to mention the person, but I hope that one day maybe they'll listen, or someone who knows them is going to be listening. And you know this: I had a client. He was in Australia that I did a great deal of coaching for, built a website for. I gave him a lot of free advice, always mailed him stuff on email, on forms and statistics and whatever he needed from me. I always did this. I thought I had a friend in Australia. Now, I have a few clients in Australia, so this is just one of the many. And I really liked this guy a lot. I mean, I thought he was great. He actually, in fact, stayed at my house. He wanted to mirror me for a few days and see my school. So I said, sure, come on over, stay with me. He said, well, I'll teach a seminar for you. And I'm like, okay, great. So he did. He taught a seminar. I let him stay at my house. Anyway, long story short, I discovered that I made a big error, and I didn't bill him for 3 years. I was actually billing his buddy's credit card by accident. His buddy never noticed it. I mean, we're talking $6,000 in erroneous charges that were never noticed from his other friend, who was another client. And I figured it out, and I called up, texted the guy, actually Facebooked him, and said, I hope this doesn't ruin our relationship, because I know how money could get. I said, but over the last 3 or 4 years, I haven't billed you, and you never once told me. And he basically said to me, your fault, I'm not paying you, you're screwed, and tough luck. So now I ended up having to go back, refund the friend all the full balance. I had already paid my partner, of course, because we have a website business, and I paid her commission on all the sales for all those months that we were making money at, or so I thought. So I ended up losing like $6,000 when it's all said and done. And this person basically just said, you're screwed. And within days, he had a new website up. Within days, he had blocked me on Facebook and all this other stuff. And it was just like, yeah, you're a nice guy. He said to me in his text message on Facebook, don't worry, I won't say anything negative about you. And I'm like, what is there to say? I didn't do anything wrong. But that's it. And there's no moral integrity whatsoever. It wasn't like I'm really sorry. I even offered him to pay back a third of the money. And I said, you could pay it off at $20 a month on top of what you pay me for your website until it's done. I wasn't even asking for much money to get it repaid. I just wanted to see that he was going to repay it. And he basically just said, screw you, and I'm done. And it was over. So that's where I can see this convenience morality thing is just amazing. Yeah. Anyway.
When it's sad. I mean, I get it. It sucks. I got to come up with $6,000 or whatever it is to pay you, but I should have been honest. I would have known. I would have known that I was not paying you. If you're looking at your books, I mean, you got to look at your books.
Well, you would hope, right? You would hope, and maybe that's why he wasn't doing as well as he could have been, because he wasn't looking at his books. But however, I mean, and it's not like I said, okay, we need the $6,000 tomorrow. I said, give me $20 a month on top of all the great stuff. We'll keep our relationship fully intact. We'll keep moving forward, keep doing this and doing that. And then all of a sudden things change. Oh, you didn't do this and you didn't do that. And I came and I did a seminar. I'm going to charge you for it. And I was blown away by it, because I could literally have, if he could have seen me, my jaw was open, like, you know, 2 foot long, dragging on the floor, going like, I cannot comprehend where this person's coming from. And it's all as it could have been was just like, I'm sorry. And I've had people that have made mistakes on billing and it wasn't happy and fun. And they said, yeah, Ali, just do it in 3 payments for me. Like, they sucked it up because they're like, you're always great to me. You've always done a good job. I'm, you know, just, you made a mistake. And, so it was just shocking to me at how someone could go from being your buddy, or at least you thought so, when they were, you know, when you're giving them stuff, to being like, screw you, your mistake, tough luck.
Yeah, that's always difficult. I had a black belt who I hadn't charged in, I don't know, 2 years or something. And I approached them and I said, I feel so bad. And they're like, the funny thing is they had brought it up to me, like 2 weeks ago or 2 weeks prior. And they were like, you know, I don't remember paying you, or it's time to pay you or something. She's like, and so we went and investigated it. I hadn't charged her in 2 years. And so I came back with, like, you know, obviously I was apologetic and she was embarrassed. And so was I, actually. And so we worked it all out, and I gave her a pretty good deal. You know, I cut down some of the payments, or the amount of money. Even though they're a pretty wealthy family, they could have paid me all of it. But I was like, you know, look, it's my fault too, because they always do paid in full. So it's not like there's a monthly bill that's always – they always just pay, you know, oh, my son's going to second degree. Okay, I'll just pay you from first degree to second degree. Here it is. I mean, that's just the way they are. And
right.
But they – you know, she was like, are you sure? I feel really bad for you giving us this much off. And I said, oh, no. I said, I'm just happy that you're willing to own up to it, you know.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny, and there you go, and there's where that morality comes in, and everything gets done. So, you know, and you think about it, and you go like, okay, that's where it goes. So anyway, back to our initial conversation. I mean, we're lucky when people are that they have the right fiber of morality. We're also lucky in regards to, students or staff members that kind of understand the image. And I'm not, you know, I've had people that I've fired because they were on the outside, they were good people, and on the inside, they were bad people. You know, so you want to find people that are in line with you. Like, for example, if you run a ministry, but you know the client is one of your employees is a total heathen and doing everything wrong, you can't keep them on board because it just doesn't fit your moral fiber.
Right.
Right. So anyway, it's a shocking thing. But I hope that people take this and they listen and they use it and they maybe make some rules up and you know, they do what they got to do.
Yeah, and you got to have policy and procedures for your employees. I know that we kind of talked about that. Gosh, I don't know, maybe a year and a half ago, and I don't even remember what the call was. But I know we talked about, you know, the different rules and stuff like that. So, but these are specifically based upon your image.
I'll dig out that article, Convenience Morality. It's kind of like a cool thing. Maybe we could attach it to this audio tape.
Yep, that's what we'll do. And you're showing your age because it's not an audio tape.
Well, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Our audio blog. radio. I call it our radio show.
There you go.
It is.
Better than audio tape.
It's just a pre-recorded radio show blog that we do where, you know, people are able to download it on iTunes, which is kind of so cool. And we, you know, in closing, I just want to say thank you for everyone who's listening. I hope you're getting stuff out of what we do. We have a lot of really cool things that you and I, Duane and I, are releasing soon that are going to be able to help change the mindset of the school owner that's out there to really help them shape their business, et cetera, et cetera. But anyway, so you have any closing statements? And then I'll let you run it out.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, everybody share this, and we want you to know and understand that, you know, we're in the thick of things, too, with you, and we understand what you're going through. Some of the stuff we've already went through, some of the stuff is a cyclical thing. You end up going through it over and over and over again just because you're dealing with, you know, the human beings that are in your schools, and we obviously want to share our life, our schools, and our desire to help the industry with you, because I would have, of course, this is a phrase, but I don't really mean it. I would have killed to have something like this when I was making my mistakes and not having as many things as there are in this industry now to be able to consume and put forth. So thanks, everybody, for being on the call. Allie, thank you very much, sir.
Take care, Duane. Talk to you soon.